Fasten your seatbelt and get ready for the red eye.
Each week, we'll be immersing you in a world of adventure, from thrilling dramas to side-splitting humor and life-altering moments. Welcome aboard the Red Eye. In our quest for stories, we've reached out to crew past and present, and spoken to more than one ex-flyer who was able to take us right back to the early days of flying. I mean, perhaps not as far back as the Wright brothers, but to that point in history when air travel was both prestigious and luxurious. To the 1970s. Picture what you think of air travel now. Is what you see a cramped short-haul plane with seats that are fixed upright and lives up to its reputation as a bus in the skies? Or you travel long-haul, but turn right on boarding. Perhaps you're one of the lucky few who turns left, the business class cabin, or first. However you travel, though, and in whatever class, I can guarantee that how you see air travel now is as far removed from those early days as, well, as a DC-10 is from an A380. Let's take the crew, for instance. Yes, a flying career is still somewhat tough to get into, but back then, it wasn't even something most people would dream of. But if you did, and were brave enough to apply, if you were slim and attractive, young and unmarried, then you had to be prepared for scrutiny that has no place in today's society. Could you imagine being weighed for a job these days? And then weighed again every shift to make sure that you hadn't been eating too much from the cheese trolley? Or imagine now, as a woman, signing your contract and agreeing that you would retire peacefully at the age of 32. And the passengers, they were different too. There were no sweatpants and sneakers in the cabin. Oh no, if you were rich enough to be flying, then you were getting dressed up for the occasion, and nothing short of your Sunday best. It was a reserve of the wealthy and successful, even if you were turning right. In this episode, we've blended a few great stories from a stewardess at the much-loved British Caledonian, or BCAL as it was known in the industry, flying out of London Gatwick in the 1970s and 80s, and remembered fondly for its stylish tartan uniform. It was revered as the UK's foremost independent airline of its time. So, if you're ready, let me take you back to the BCAL days, the days when flying was a luxury. So they just didn't move. Marjorie had popped her head around the curtain at the L2 door. I swear to you, Patricia drew in a deep puff of her cigarette, flicking the ash into a plastic cup on the galley side. They just sat there. At first, we thought they just didn't understand us, but, I mean, even if you don't understand English, you know when your plane has just skidded off the runway, surely. There was us shouting our heads off for them to get off, and they just sat there. The curtain swished back, and Marjorie emerged in her white blouse, ready for the meal service. So let me get this right. You had 119 passengers, and they were all Jehovah's Witnesses. Patricia nodded, blowing cigarette smoke out of the corner of her mouth. Yep, every last one of them. They were going to a convention, apparently. Marjorie was frowning as she hung her other blouse in the wardrobe. And they refused to get off. Why? They thought it was their calling. Didn't want to mess with fate, Marjorie laughed, shaking her head. No matter how many times she told the story, she still couldn't quite believe it herself. Imagine if we'd been on fire. Well, you wouldn't have stayed on board, would you? Heck no. Patricia put out her cigarette under the tap and dropped the butt in the cup, pushing it back under the water boiler for later. Thankfully, apart from skidding off the runway and coming to a stop on the grass, that had been the end of the emergency, and so she hadn't had to break protocol and get off before the passengers. But after running the scenario over in her mind several times now, she had to agree with Marjorie and admit she would have saved her own life if they had really chosen to stay on board. And then what happened? Well, I think they eventually realised it wasn't their time, and they weren't going to die that day. So they just kind of got up and slid slowly down the slides. Unbelievable! Marjorie was still shaking her head in disbelief as she put on her white gloves. Patricia followed her lead and put hers on too. Right, let's get this done. The two girls walked up to the front galley, where trolleys were laid up ready for service. It was only just over 6 hours to Lagos, and the first-class service would take most of that to deliver. Do you mind carving? Patricia asked. I just can't get the slices thin enough. Perfect team, said Marjorie, as they wheeled the steaming meat and sides into the aisle. I hate silver service. Patricia smiled and tapped the spoon and fork that were already in her hand together. Well, Miss Jewel, we should work together more often. Yes, Miss Biddicombe, we definitely should. Mr. Eastman, she set the brakes on the trolley and smiled down at 1A. What can myself and Miss Biddicombe serve you today? Marjorie emerged from the flight deck just as Patricia came back into the galley after offering the cigar service. The air in the cockpit was foggy and made her yearn for a cigarette. She looked at her watch and decided there was just about time, pulling her gloves off by the fingertips and taking the packet out of the small stowage where she had left one. She offered one to her friend. No, thank you. I'm trying to cut down, she said. How are the pilots? Asked Patricia. Handsome, said Marjorie with a wink. Which one? Patricia laughed as she lit her cigarette. Both. Either will do, said Marjorie. I have 3 more years to marry a pilot and start having children. You and every girl I fly with lately, Patricia rolled her eyes. It was true. Almost everyone she flew with lately was dreaming of marrying a pilot and having children. Not her, though. She was already engaged to be married to Edward, although she had insisted on a long engagement when he had asked her, and she wasn't quite ready to give up this life just quite yet. And besides, he was off on another tour with the Navy soon, so that would buy her at least 6 more months. Great job, girls! The purser came into the galley just as the seatbelts came on for landing. Oh, heck, she said as she checked herself in the mirror on the fridge door. They are still clearing in economy. Always the same on these flights, sighed Patricia, dousing her cigarette. I guess we had better get changed then, Marge. Yes, I guess we'd better. The DC-10 pulled slowly onto stand, and the manager stood bent over, looking through the window as the jetway rolled slowly towards them. Did we lock the money away? She asked over her shoulder. Yes, I saw the economy purser do it when I was in there, said Patricia. After a spate of robberies in Lagos Airport, it had been deemed safer by the company that the duty-free monies be locked in a safe in the cockpit while the plane was on the ground here. They had all welcomed the news, as no one enjoys getting robbed after a busy flight, do they? Great, she said. My goodness, what a welcome, she sighed and stood up straight. I still find it so unnerving when they meet us with a gun slung across their chest. Oh, me too, agreed Patricia. As much as they were reassured that they only had rubber bullets and were there for their safety, having to have an armed guard everywhere you went here was surely a sign that you weren't particularly safe, wasn't it? There was a knock on the door, and the manager lifted the handle to open the door. An armed guard, or so she thought, stood next to the member of ground staff. Neither of them was smiling.
Madame, please do not be alarmed, but I am afraid the airport has been taken over. Please ask your passengers to remain seated.
Patricia froze, holding her breath as the ground agent spoke. She looked at the gunman now and realized that he wasn't the friendly security guard that was there to protect them. Indeed, with his gun now pointing in her direction, he was quite obviously the very opposite. The manager picked up the phone and made the announcement. Patricia could hear the tremble in her voice as she told them there was a situation at the boarding door.
Now, let me speak to the captain, he said.
She dialed the number and handed him the handset.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have just been advised that Lagos Airport has been taken over by rebel forces.
There were muffled cries from the cabin as the captain spoke over the PA.
We've been assured of your safety, so please do not panic. We plan to comply with their instructions and then hopefully we will be on our way. We do ask you all to stay seated for the time being and do anything that is asked of you.
Patricia couldn't help thinking that he sounded surprisingly calm. But then, he wasn't stood here, like they were, with a gun pointed at him, was he? The rebel grunted something that Patricia couldn't understand, tipping his gun at the ground agent.
"Can I please see the manifest?"
he asked the manager. She nodded and flicked through the paperwork in her hand that she had been preparing to hand over, pulling out the reams of paper that listed every soul on board. She gave it to him, and he scanned down until he found what he was looking for.
22C,
he muttered quietly, before saying something to the gunman. He took a sharp breath in and stepped onto the plane, turning right into the cabin. The gunman stayed where he was. Patricia thought she might faint and reminded herself to breathe. She watched as the agent knelt over the Nigerian man in 22C, who rose to his feet and calmly took his bag from the overhead locker.
"Thank you,"
he said as he got off. His face was kind and accepting, as if he knew why they had targeted him. "Goodbye, sir," they echoed, all of their voices somber. Patricia could have cried. In her mind, she wished him good luck and hoped that he would be okay. And then they were gone. Just like that, the jetway was empty, and they stood in silence waiting for whatever was going to happen next. Nothing did. Nothing happened the next hour, or the one after that. Nothing happened until eventually the captain's radio came to life in the cockpit.
BR-355, you can deplane. The airport is clear,
came a cheerful voice.
Roger that, he replied. Airport is clear. Deplaning now. Thank you, sir.
Have a nice day,
came the reply.
Yes, we will now. Thanks, he said.
He picked up the interphone and called L2. Patricia, L2. Patricia answered the phone.
Patricia, it's the captain. We can get the passengers off. The airport is clear, he said.
Oh, thank heavens, she said with a huge sigh, feeling the relief flood her body. She covered the mouthpiece and spoke quickly to the manager. They had both stayed together at the door this whole time in case they'd come back.
Airport's clear. We can get them off, she said.
Anything else, Captain?
Yes, he said. Can someone bring us up a bottle of scotch from the bar? I think we need a debrief.
I'm on my way, she laughed. It was beyond your control. The captain was resigned about the events from the day before as the duty manager apologized for what they had been through.
Perhaps, but if I had been there, they would have known my feelings about it,
he said sternly.
Madame,
he turned to the manager who was standing behind him.
Here is your manifest.
He handed her the wad of paper.
Air France have been cancelled, so we have taken some of their passengers and will be full. Abiola will escort you and your crew to the gate.
He swung his arm towards the ground agent, who was accompanied by a real security guard this time. Thank you, she said, taking it from him and tucking it into her bag. Patricia stayed close to the front as they walked together to the aircraft, listening to the conversation between the captain and the ground agent.
Probably a good job he wasn't here then, she heard the captain say. He might have got himself killed.
She was surprised to see the agent smile widely and shake his head.
No, sir. Mr. Obasanjo is a very respected chief. He would be allowed to make his feelings known.
The captain turned to look at him, and Patricia could see his eyebrows raise under the peak of his hat.
A chief, you say?
Yes.
Abiola nodded, still smiling.
We have many chiefs in Nigeria. Some are not very important, but they are all respected.
Even ones that work in the airport, the captain said with a grin.
Yes, sir.
Abiola nodded. Inwardly, Patricia laughed. That was why she wasn't ready to leave flying yet. She still hadn't seen and heard it all, so to say.
Would you like champagne?
Patricia offered the tray of coupe glasses to the American couple who had just boarded.
Well, certainly. The gentleman took two glasses, handing one to his wife, who smiled at him, but never looked at Patricia.
Are you going onwards to America? She asked, looking at them both.
Yes, yes, we are. Home to Mississippi, he replied. We've had a blast, but it will be good to get back, won't it, dear?
Yes, it will, she said, taking a sip of her champagne and smiling at him.
I bet you've missed home, Patricia asked the lady. She ignored her and looked down at her glass.
Yes, she has, the gentleman replied on her behalf.
Oh, well, welcome on board, Patricia said, perplexed as to why the lady seemed unable to answer for herself. Madam, would you like me to hang your coat? She asked, making one last attempt at engagement. Still, she looked down.
I'll bring them up in a minute, the man smiled. Thank you.
Patricia nodded and walked back to the galley. Odd, she said to herself, shaking it out of her head. She poured herself a glass of water. After the events of the day before, there had been a rather late debrief, or room party as it became, and she was feeling a little dehydrated. All okay in there? She called through the open cockpit door.
All good, thanks,
one of them called back. She turned around as the man arrived holding his wife's coat and his own.
Mind if you hang these for me, miss?
Certainly, sir, Patricia smiled, taking them off him with her gloved hands. Sir, I hope you don't mind me asking, but is your wife okay? She asked, hoping that her judgment of him as far as open and approachable was right.
She's fine, he said. Why do you ask?
Oh, she just seemed upset about something, Patricia said, feeling herself blush. She shouldn't have asked. I must have been oversensitive when she didn't answer me.
Oh, that, he grinned. Yes, she's a little old-fashioned, I'm afraid. Been brought up not to talk to servants.
Patricia's eyes widened. Did she just hear that correctly? He must have read her face.
No offense, he added quickly, flicking up the palm of his hand at her.
Oh, none taken, she lied, pulling her lips into a tight smile.
None taken at all, she called after him as he left the galley.
Come with me, the manager tapped Patricia on the shoulder. She had been 1,000 miles away as they waited for the last couple of passengers to arrive. I might need a witness.
Whatever now, thought Patricia as she followed her down the aisle and into the economy cabin.
Around row 50, they stopped and the manager looked down at the large lady who was sat clutching a bag on her lap.
Madame, she said, I understand you may have a live animal in your bag.
She said it with a serious voice. The lady looked up and nodded.
A parrot? She mumbled.
Madam, I am ever so sorry, but we are not permitted to take live animals or birds into the UK without the right documentation, and certainly not in the cabin. I'm afraid if you wish to continue with your flight, you will need to leave the parrot here.
The lady shook her head firmly.
You are not taking my parrot, she said, glaring straight ahead, her arms over the top of the small case.
Perhaps you would rather wait for the next direct flight to France. You may carry animals into that country, she offered.
She looked straight ahead while she shook her head, tightening her belt in an act of defiance.
Well, then I'm afraid that you will have to get off, the manager said, stepping back to make room in the aisle for her to stand.
She shook her head again.
Madam, I am sorry, but we simply cannot allow this.
The tone of her voice crept higher.
Either the parrot gets off, or you will both have to.
Patricia held in a laugh. This whole trip was becoming a parody of bizarre situations. When the lady made no effort to move, the manager turned around.
Can you get the duty manager, Miss Jewel? She said with a sigh.
Patricia nodded, thinking that that was probably a good idea. After all, he was a respected chief, so she was bound to do what he said, right? She couldn't have been more wrong, nor could she have anticipated what would happen next.
Madame,
he said, standing next to the lady.
You must give me the parrots.
He reached over to take the bag, and she batted his hand away.
You are not taking my parrot, she said.
Then you must leave the aircraft,
he said matter-of-factly. She shook her head. He took in a deep breath and stepped as close as he could to her.
Madame, we cannot take off with a live parrot, so if you won't give me the parrot, you cannot go to London. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Patricia looked on at the stalemate that was unfolding, anticipating his next move.
Perhaps he would get a scary security man with a big gun to make her move. That would work with most people, right?
Okay.
He bit his lip and took a deep breath, looking upwards as he took a moment to think.
How about,
he said slowly,
you let me see the parrots?
The lady looked up at him, her face unsure.
He is sedated, right?
She nodded.
And if he is truly asleep, maybe I will let you go, okay?
Patricia didn't believe him. Surely he couldn't expect them to take the flight knowing there was a live animal on board and knowing that they were breaking the law on landing. For some reason, though, the lady did. Slowly, she clicked open the fasteners on the small case and opened it to reveal the sleeping bird, who had been placed on a knitted blanket. Patricia leaned in and watched as he reached in with both hands, first smoothing the feathers down along the body, then moving his thumbs either side of its head and running them down until he picked the sleeping bird up and wrung its neck. Patricia threw her hand to her mouth to stop the scream escaping. Laying it back down on the blanket, he turned to the manager, his face serious.
You can depart now,
he said with a shake of his head. With 237 passengers and one dead parrot on board, the plane taxied out to the runway. Patricia still had a sick feeling in her stomach as she looked out of the window. The lady had seemed strangely unemotional when it had happened, had appeared emotionally unattached to the poor bird. The duty manager had seemed to think that she was taking it to France to sell, but whatever her reason, well, it hadn't ended well for either of them, had it? Patricia leaned back, her hands under her legs and head against her headrest, as they accelerated for takeoff. Perhaps that date when she would be ready to leave flying, the time when she would feel she had seen and heard it all, was closer now than it ever had been before. The Red Eye Podcast is produced and narrated by me, Ali Murphy. These stories are based on true events, but certain details, characters, and timelines have been altered to protect the innocent. Visit our website, theredeyepod.com, to subscribe to our newsletter and to find out details on how you can contribute your story for us to turn into an episode. If you enjoyed listening to our stories, please like, subscribe, and review. Thank you. Today's episode featured the gorgeous voice of Issy Adeola. You can see more of Issy on his TikTok and Instagram at Issy the Scribe, or on his website, issythescribe.com. I'll pop the links in the show notes.